We break down how the Baltimore Ravens were able to best the New England Patriots in week three of the 2022 season with a very special guest next here on Locked On Ravens.
You are Locked On Ravens, your daily Baltimore Ravens podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And we return with another episode of Locked On Ravens, your daily Baltimore Ravens podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Ostreicher of Ravens Wire. We're here on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Thank you so much for tuning in today and making Locked On Ravens your first listen. We're free and available on all platforms that includes over on YouTube. And today's episode of Locked On Ravens is presented by Prize Picks. Prize Picks is daily fantasy made easy. Pick 2 to 5 players. If they score more or less than their Prize Picks projection, you can win up to 10 times your money on your entry. First time users can receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100 with promo code Locked On. That's prizepicks.com. Promo code Locked On. We return. It is Taco Tuesday, a victory Taco Tuesday. That is, the Ravens pull off a 37-26 win over the New England Patriots. All things considered, a pretty big one considering the collapse that they had in week two against the Dolphins. Here to break that all down with me and more is from Baltimore Beatdown, Spencer Schultz. And Spencer, again, this is a game that wasn't necessarily a must win, but a very important win nonetheless.
Most certainly was. And a game that, sure, you know, going on the road to go visit Bill Belichick in the Patriots home opener, a team that feels feisty and feels like they're trying to prove, are they going to be a contender? Are they going to be a team that's capable of maybe competing for their division like they did last year? Things like that. Another year removed from Tom Brady. Definitely could have been a game that you lose. They lost the last time they went up to New England and played Bill Belichick, even without Tom Brady. So it's a tough team, a team that the Ravens have never beaten in the regular season in New England previously. And for the Ravens to play two of their first three games on the road and to walk out 2-1, and obviously – they do have that difficult loss against what looks like a really good Miami Dolphins team, but to continue to be 2-1 and get ready to go play a Buffalo Bills team at home now, it could be a lot worse, and the Ravens are not in bad shape.
Yeah, 2-1 so far in that AFC East tour. You mentioned they'll wrap it up against Buffalo on Sunday here, but let's talk a bit about this game, Spencer, and obviously the talk of town, the talk of the league is Lamar Jackson and how he has performed. He is not slowing down against the Patriots, 18 of 29. 218 yards. You have the 4 touchdowns, 1 interception, capped off the Jackson 5, 11 carries, 107, and a score there. So 5 total touchdowns. Spencer, Lamar Jackson, he looks poised. He looks confident. The decision-making is there. The zip on the ball. There's so much that impresses me about Lamar Jackson. What impressed you about this performance here in week 3?
It just impressed me how calm he remained throughout the game. Patrick McCary goes out. Daniel Faalele, who's never played left tackle before, aside from, you know, some preseason and throughout this training camp, gets put in there for his first NFL experience. Someone who's been, you know, tagged as a developmental guy, let up a couple sacks, all of those things. You know, Lamar missed a couple of throws early, just didn't put the ball, I think, where he wanted to. Sure, it could have been, you know, maybe receiver wasn't quite on the same page, whatever. But nothing fazed him. In the run game, I thought that he played super calmly when they started using Veer and Bash and the kind of, you know, as Bill Belichick called them, C-gap run concepts that the Ravens used. He was calm. He was patient. You know, he picked his spots. He protected himself really well. I wasn't deterred by the interception that he threw. I think that when you go back and look at that play, you basically see them run crossers with Devin Duvernay kind of running as a flanker over top of it. And Jonathan Jones, I believe, the corner for the Patriots, just peeled off of his man and made a really nice play. And, you know, it was 3rd and long anyway, and he threw a pick. So it's not the end of the world. So considering that he did miss some throws, he did take some sacks, you know, the offensive line was shaky at one point. All things considered, I don't think you could have asked for a much better performance out of Lamar Jackson, particularly when the second half got underway and when the Patriots took a lead. And in those kind of difficult circumstances, obviously, like I said, the Patriots home opener, it's rocking there. And they just had no kind of deterred feeling of anxiety or that they weren't going to be able to get it done or that, you know, anything was going to compound or snowball for them. And watching him be able to make plays in the red zone, make plays in goal to go, recognize blitzes, manage things pre-snap. I think John Harbaugh alluded to how well he manages the game right now, like what he's doing to facilitate the offense in terms of the play clock, in terms of at the line of scrimmage, in terms of checking into runs. We're about to watch the Manning cast here, Peyton and Eli Manning. And the funny, I think one of the funniest things, sidebar, I guess, is how often you hear Peyton or Eli, oh, check to a run here. Oh, check to a run here. That is such a major role of what a successful quarterback does, is understand where they can check into getting 4 yards at least. And I think Lamar Jackson's seemed to do a really great job of that. So, yeah, he's playing like the best player in the NFL, the best quarterback in the NFL right now. And off to a hot start. His game looks more complete than it's ever looked. It's better than 2019 substantially. And what they're doing under center and the ability for him to, like I said, facilitate all of those things, but also do things for the first time. Dating back to Louisville in 2016, Lamar Jackson has only ever thrown the ball 70 times from under center. I think 18 of those were at the 1 yard line through Louisville and his first 4 seasons in the NFL. So, you know, adding more to his plate, getting smarter, getting better, continuing to develop even further, prove that he doesn't necessarily, you know, need his legs, but of course he still has them. So it was an outstanding performance for him and put the game away several times. He used his arm, he used his legs, and proved why he is the Weapon X in the NFL.
Yeah, and the thing that I keep going back to, Spencer, is the efficiency that he's had this year, especially. I mean, you can go to the touchdown department, a couple other areas too, but I mean, 18 completions, 4 touchdowns. Right now, he has an 11.4 touchdown percentage, meaning he's thrown a touchdown on 11.4% of his passes through 3 weeks. The next closest to that so far is Tua over there in Miami with 7.9. So he has been extremely efficient this year, and I think just making super smart throws for the most part, which I think is really impressive. But Spencer, the weapons around Lamar Jackson have also stepped up. We saw a bit more of a run game in this one. Justice Hill looked super explosive. J.K. Dobbins does return, and it just looked and felt really good to see him have the ball in his hands again after a long absence. But pass catcher wise, Spencer, Devin Duvernay can't stop scoring touchdowns. Mark Andrews, we know what he can do. He scores 2 of his own. Rashad Bateman has a fumble, which was it really a fumble? I don't know about that one, but still, he stepped up and broke ankles and had a really nice yards after the catch after he caught a football. I mean, what did you see out of these pass catchers? Because right now, the Ravens passing game is what's carrying this offense.
Yeah, I mean, it starts with Mark Andrews, if you want to talk about the pass catchers. I don't know that there are like 10 better receiving threats in the NFL than Mark Andrews. And there's this kind of stigma of being a tight end and what that means. And you're not on the outside and not beating corners or whatever it is. Well, he's catching footballs and scoring touchdowns nonstop again. Looks like the best tight end in the NFL again for the second consecutive year. And just to consistently abuse defenders at the stem every single time they try to get, if they're flat footed, he'll swipe their hands or swim them and go right by them. We see the Patriots try to run cover 0 in the red zone. And Lamar Jackson basically flips J.K. Dobbins from one side to the other and watches a safety follow J.K. Dobbins, which then tells him, okay, well then that linebacker's blitzing who's standing right in front of me because there's a safety right behind him. Now I know it's cover 0. I know that Mark Andrews, I can just toss a lollipop up and he's going to go dunk on someone after swimming over top of them and making them get into recovery mode. He really is a weapon, and I'm willing to stand on the soapbox and say, if you go watch really closely what a guy like Cooper Kupp does, and to get into that whole tight end versus perimeter receiver argument, all of those things, Mark Andrews is just very similar to being just a gigantic Cooper Kupp. He's just a little stronger, not quite as sudden. But, you know, sure, Cooper Kupp can maybe do more damage after the catch, yada, yada, yada. But the effect that he has, the gravity that he holds, drawing multiple defenders, drawing kind of combination coverage where they're high-lowing him with a linebacker and a safety, or having someone play outside and inside leverage and trying to funnel him and jump something. And for him to have the attention that he gets and also still succeed the way that he does is outstanding. I think he's one of, him and Lamar Jackson right now are on the offensive side of the football, I think two of the, you know, top 20 players in the NFL. Mark Andrews has been unbelievable, and it really starts with him and what he's able to open up. And then you go look at Rashad Bateman and Devin Duvernay that are doing it in very different ways. Duvernay is a no-nonsense route runner. There is no fanciness about his releases. He is like, I am a 4.3 track star, 110-meter hurdle champ, 100-meter champ in the state of Texas. I am just going to get off the line as quickly as I can and test you vertically as quickly as I can. And ran right away on that impressive touchdown that he has from that slot fade, second slot fade touchdown he's had this season. He generated so much separation so quickly and forced that DB to have to just go into a dead sprint, not be able to locate the ball, have to try to play through his hands. Lamar Jackson puts a great ball on, and Devin Duvernay makes a play, also takes a slant and runs 20, 30 yards after the catch. We watch Rashad Bateman do the same thing, runs a pretty, you know, nuanced comeback route, picks the ball up. Lamar Jackson peppers it over top of an intermediate defender trying to dive and swat it. And then what he can do after the catch in terms of just making guys miss and taking angles and putting guys in bad positions, you know, takes a 10, 12, four, maybe 14-yard route and ends up with an explosive play that flips the field for the Ravens. That's something that they haven't had in this offense. Marquise Brown was supposed to be that guy. He had a couple nice catch and runs in his tenure in Baltimore, but Bateman is consistently beating angles, consistently crossing guys over after the catch. You know, has the little fumble situation, which I do think was a fumble, to sidebar, I suppose. But you know, talking about all those guys, you see Josh Oliver go make a nice little paced play for his first NFL touchdown. You see him spike the ball with, you know, the weight of a thousand worlds. He was a third round pick. He was a freak athlete, suffers a significant injury, ends up getting traded to the Ravens. You know, doesn't really get to contribute a ton in the pass game, grinds in the run game, keeps trying to improve there. And to watch him finally get that culmination of that first career touchdown years into his career, you could just tell how much it meant to him. So I thought that was really cool too. And Isaiah Likely, they're getting him the ball underneath. They're feeding him manufactured touches. Yet another player that is dangerous after the catch. So the Ravens finally have an offense where guys can run away from defenders, where guys can catch the ball and help you out. We saw the Rashad Bateman touchdown last week. You know, now J.K. Dobbins is coming back into this offense. We see him catch the ball in his first touch since 2020 and arm shiver someone into the turf violently. So they have a plethora of players that are capable of helping Lamar Jackson after the catch for what feels like the first time in Jackson's career. So it's been really fun to watch this unit come together early in the season, a unit that has been utterly disrespected, just the pass catchers in general, maybe not necessarily the tight ends, but what Lamar Jackson's weapons are, quote unquote. Well, it looks like he has one of the better groups of pass catchers in the NFL through 3 weeks. So it's been super fun to watch.
Yeah, guys are stepping up all over the place. I mean, Devin Duvernay stepping up into that number two wide receiver role. Bateman, you know, he hasn't necessarily had like a 10-catch game or anything, but he's making the most of the catches. And Mark Andrews, I mean, again, you talked about it. Definitely one of the top 20 players in this league right now when looking at everything combined. We'll talk about the offensive line a bit in the final segment, so be sure to stay tuned for that on Daniel Faalele and Tyler Linderbaum, et cetera. But coming up, we're going to get into the defense, talking about some of the ups and downs that unit went through on Sunday in New England. So be sure to stay tuned. We still have a ton to talk about here on the show. But first, I do want to tell you a bit about Prize Picks. And for fantasy, it's something I've been a part of for a long time. I've had multiple fantasy football leagues for many different years now, and it's really fun for me. But with Prize Picks, it's super easy to use, and you can have current entries all over the place. And how it works is you pick 2 to 5 players, and if they will go score more or less in their Prize Picks projection, you can win up to 10 times your money on any entry. There's no competing against other people, so it's you versus projections available. Prize Picks offers projections on any sport that you watch, including NFL, NBA, MLB, you have NHL, PGA, college football, college basketball, and more. Entries can be made in 60 seconds or less. It's that easy. You have safe and fast withdrawals, and they're currently operational in over 30 states and in Canada. So download the Prize Picks app or go to prizepicks.com to sign up and play daily fantasy sports. First-time users can receive 100% instant deposit match up to $100 with promo code LOCKEDON. If you deposit $100, Prize Picks will give you $100. If you deposit $50, Prize Picks will give you $50. Don't forget to enter promo code LOCKEDON at sign up for an instant deposit match up to $100. We're back here with our second segment of Locked On Ravens. Kevin Allshucker still here with Spencer Schultz of Baltimore Beatdown. And Spencer, when you look at the Ravens defense, definitely a mixed bag when you talk about certain aspects in this game. I know people look, and this was the Devontae Parker coming out party. Parker had 5 receptions, 156 yards. I mean, if you want a yards per catch on that, 31.2 yards per catch. The Ravens get gashed a couple times in this game pretty consistently. You have the end of the first half where the Ravens give up 43 yards in 30 seconds, allow the Patriots to get in field goal range and add a field goal at the end of the half. We've seen some big play issues a bit from Mike McDonald's defense. How concerning are those to you early on?
I mean, Miami game, Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle. Once Marlon Humphrey goes down, the Dolphins score twice in 5 plays offensively. And then to watch this game, that they were able to turn the ball over yet again, that they've probably had at least half of the interceptions this year so far that they had last year, somewhere right around there. I believe they had 9 and they're currently at 4 or 5. So been able to get off the field. They were 2 of 9. The Patriots were 2 of 9 on third down, and they have continued to play really well on third down. Get off of the field. You know, they were given a short field twice due to turnovers after the Rashad Bateman fumble and the Lamar Jackson interception, and they did allow two touchdowns there. You'd love to see them be able to get off the field with a field goal in one of those circumstances, but the Patriots end up early on in the second half, have their first kind of actual long scoring touchdown drive, and I think it was 20 to 13 or 20 to 14 at that point. And from there, they were able to buckle down, get off the field, produce turnovers, you know, a two-point conversion they stuff as well. That was almost a really crazy play on that little lateral to Mac Jones. But, you know, not haven't really gotten a ton of consistent sacks and things of that nature. And, you know, you watch Devontae Parker. The Patriots like to use a lot of in-breaking route concepts like levels and Y-cross and mesh and some of those things. And Mac Jones peppered a couple balls over, especially in the first quarter, I think. You mentioned Devontae Parker. I think hit two catches for like 85 yards or something like that, or 80 yards in the first quarter. Jalen Armour Davis just kind of got taken inside, and you know they were trusting him and man, and Devontae Parker made two big plays and flipped the field a couple times, and you know, got that taken care of, and Parker didn't really beat them a ton after that. The ground game, the Patriots have a diverse, awesome, great offensive line. They've had a really good run game for quite some time. They last year beat the Buffalo Bills, the mighty Buffalo Bills, throwing three passes in a game. They can run the football really well. And it wasn't, you know, it wasn't an embarrassing performance, I would say, from the Ravens run defense, but they definitely had some things to learn. Travis Jones gets in there a couple times, thought he took on a couple double teams really nicely. Would like to see him be able to lock out, keep his eyes up, and be a little more aware of the ball carrier at times, but it was his first NFL game following an injury. So expectations don't need to be so high, but you know, they got off the field a ton of times. Kyle Hamilton ends up making a play. Marlon Humphrey makes a play. Marcus Peters makes two plays, and they're valuing turning the ball over. They're valuing getting vision to the quarterback so that they can jump the ball and flip the field and give the ball back to Lamar Jackson and steal a possession. So I think that there were some bleeding issues, and that there were some issues in some short yardage situations. They let Mac Jones beat him on the ground a little bit. I think he only had like 35 yards, but he was able to convert some first downs, score a touchdown, a couple things there. So still trying to figure out how to contain properly as they're rushing, I would say, and be able to shed at the right time and kind of let the quarterback run into pressure a little bit more for some sacks. But had a little bit of pass rush, generated some nice things. Patrick Queen gets a little sack. So this defense is still learning, still growing. Marcus Peters in his second game back. You're still relying on a guy like Jalen Armour Davis early, who I think kind of got benched after Devontae Parker beat him a couple times. So, you know, still a learning experience, still all of those things. But I think Marcus Williams has been outstanding. I think Chuck Clark has been a constant as usual. Marlon Humphrey's played extremely well this season. And to watch Marcus Peters start to really look like Marcus Peters is a godsend for a team that paid him so much money and needs him so badly. And Kyle Fuller goes down and Brandon Stevens is still banged up and all of those things happening at once. It's nice to see that they do have their leader, Marcus Peters, able to go make game-winning plays for them two times.
Yeah, and you know, some numbers behind the turnovers. The Ravens, you mentioned it, they did have 9 interceptions in 17 games last year. They have 6 so far in 3 games. So two-thirds, they're two-thirds of the way there to their entire 2021 total. And then they actually forced 15 turnovers, total turnovers in 17 games. They're up to 8 in 3 games this season. So over half of the way there to their 2021 total. So it's impressive. And also, Spencer, I wanted to get your opinion on just how timely those turnovers were. I mean, you mentioned the Kyle Hamilton punch out on Nelson Aguilar, which again, we kind of talked about this a bit on Sunday after the game, but we saw so many times last year, the ball bounced a certain way and it wasn't in the Ravens' favor. And that ball is bouncing out of bounds. And Marcus Peters is able to somehow keep it in on that recovery. It was the Kyle Hamilton, Marcus Peters duo, which I think ultimately won them this game because of the timeliness of that turnover. You have the Marlon Humphrey interception in the end zone. Marcus Peters sealing the game with an interception. Those are the timely turnovers Baltimore needs to get their defense off the field and just to get the momentum back on their side.
Most definitely. And to have it be the three guys that force turnovers, Marlon Humphrey, Kyle Hamilton, and Marcus Peters, your first round pick turned second highest paid non-quarterback in team history, your $70 million other cornerback that you traded for, who's coming off of an ACL, and then your first round pick, who was your second highest pick in John Harbaugh's tenure and the highest pick of Eric DaCosta's tenure. All three of those guys turned the ball over. You spent all of that capital to have these guys in your secondary, and they went and won you a game. And it just feels like relieving Kyle Hamilton. The Ravens put out, you know, him screaming basically afterwards, like a guttural roar of like pride and release and all of those things. He's taking all that accountability last week for a couple blown coverages and saying how he basically let down the city and his teammates and, you know, his coaches and everyone. And, you know, he's holding himself accountable. And it just felt like a eureka moment for him. And they dialed his snaps back a little bit. They really maximized his situations that he felt confident in, it felt like. So to watch him go punch that ball out. And like you said, Kevin, for Marcus Peters to have the natural skill to corral a football that so few defenders have, that has resulted in, what, 40 interceptions throughout his career, you can't ask for much more as a result. And it does win them the game. The Patriots have the ball with 6:36 left. And Aguilar runs 28 yards up the sideline. Hamilton, who, you know, famously ran a 4.7 and is too slow to play safety and this, that, and the other, goes and chases a 4.3 guy down and punches the ball out from behind. And then Peters corrals it. And like you said, wins you the game there. The Ravens go score another touchdown. Marcus Peters picks the ball off again. And then it's curtains. Lamar Jackson kneels the ball out three times to get John Harbaugh's 150th career win right after his 60th birthday. I mean, it was a really awesome win, and a win that it felt like the Ravens for so long been wearing the t-shirts finish. Their defense hasn't in quite some time. Today they finished. Today they were in a close game in the fourth quarter and stuffed the Patriots when they needed to, once they had a lead. So outstanding effort from those guys, those DBs, those playmakers, those guys you spend the money on, the picks on, spend all of your time on, all of that stuff. They went and did it for you.
Yeah, and also, yeah, you have Josh Bynes making a play, an interception for Josh Bynes too. Also, he led the team in tackles with 10, so shout out to him. And also shout out, again, we've talked about him, Spencer, Justin Madubuike, who had a sack in this game. And also, he's just looked so good over the course of these first 3 weeks. He had another solid performance from him, and we'll talk about this a bit in the third segment, but with the, I'd say, uncertainty at the time of this recording surrounding Michael Pierce and just what his status is, Baltimore might need some of these guys to step up even more than they have, and that includes Madubuike.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. They do. Broderick Washington, Justin Madubuike, Travis Jones, those young guys are going to have to take more snaps. And Calais Campbell is playing too much. They are not wise to continue. You watch Justin Houston have to play too much as a result of injury. And what happens? His body fails him a little bit. I would think that would happen. That is a logical thing to happen. If you're asking defenders who have put over a decade of toll on their body in the NFL to go play 80, 90% of snaps in their mid-30s, their bodies are probably going to wear down. So those guys are going to rely on quite a bit. Luckily, they're not playing teams that are super rushing, formidable attacks, I would say. You know, Josh Allen can hurt you with his legs, and sure, could the Bills go have a 150-yard rushing game? Yeah, they've done it before, but not a team that really looks to do that, as well as, you know, the Bengals. They've had their struggles. Joe Mixon now banged up. Their offensive line's been having a little bit of issues figuring out their run game as well. Feels like it's been pretty predictable. So we'll see what happens with Michael Pierce. But that's why you brought in a Brent Urban as well, who's inactive and got some rest in this game, to be able to go be that run stuffer when you need him, go take 15 snaps for you. So Michael Pierce is one of the better nose tackles in the NFL, probably a top 3-5 nose tackle in the NFL. And it's going to be a big loss. And someone that had been rushing the passer really well also. Made plays in that game, Michael Pierce, you know, a couple early on before having to exit. So they're deep up front, and they're going to need to utilize that. So Houston's a little bit of a different story. We see Copeland come in, Jason Pierre-Paul coming in. Feels like they're, you know, it's like the game Fortnite. You're able to kind of build as you're running. It's like they're running off of a cliff and able to just kind of keep finding footholds to be able to keep going. Malik Harrison, a guy that's going to, you know, take more snaps, things like that. Maybe a trade's on the way at some point. Maybe Tyus Bowser can come back. Maybe David Ajabo can come back. So I guess they'll just continue to build as they're working their way through the battle royale.
Yeah, guys will have to step up. And again, we don't know the severity of the injury now. From what John Harbaugh said on Sunday after the game, isn't looking extremely promising, but we can hope that it ends up being a bit better than anticipated so far. But yeah, Madubuike had a solid game on Sunday. Washington Jones, as you talked about, are really, really important. And coming up in our final segment, we'll talk a bit about the offensive line, where the Ravens are there moving forward. Jason Pierre-Paul, more injury concerns, that Buffalo game in week 4, and more. So be sure to stay tuned. We still have a ton to talk about here on Locked On Ravens. We're back here. Our final segment of Locked On Ravens. Kevin Ostreicher still talking with Spencer Schultz. And Spencer, I do want to talk about the offensive line a little bit to start off this segment, because we saw Patrick McCary exit this game early with an ankle. You know, it's been being reported, it was John Harbaugh said it was a sprain. Adam Schefter coming out saying it's a low sprain. But you have in game there aren't options for you outside of Daniel Faalele, who never played left tackle, you know, was a really only a right tackle in college. He had been getting some work there, but he comes in and struggles early, you know, struggled with his vertical depth, as I know Cole Jackson has talked about it and really broken down well. But then as the course of the game goes on, the Ravens are able to get him some help and kind of help him out on that side. And we see Lamar Jackson benefit because of that. We see Tyler Linderbaum have a really good game. And I think this offensive line, you could almost call it a bit underrated, as they performed, I think, a lot better than some people think they have so far.
Definitely. And the run game, you know, it does help when you start using Lamar Jackson, who is one of the greatest rushing threats in the history of the sport, especially at the professional level. It's going to help a little bit. He does soften the blow a little bit. But Ben Powers, Tyler Linderbaum, and Kevin Zeitler for 3 weeks have done what they've needed to do. They have taken care of business. Tyler Linderbaum has a little bit of struggles against Quinnen Williams. And then, in my opinion, turned in a dominant performance on Sunday, as I've gone back through. Was putting guys into the dirt, was picking up on stunts, was really performing at as high as an undersized center could be performing 3 weeks into his career. I think Tyler Linderbaum played that well. Then Powers hasn't had any issues. You know, is Ben Powers the most athletic guy in the world? No. He is a little bit, you know, I guess more plodding, and he doesn't quite have foot speed, you know, with the Quentin Nelsons of the world and things of that nature, but he's not missing assignments. He's executing his blocks. He's nasty in the run game. He hasn't missed. He's not letting up, you know, a bunch of sacks, and no one, you know, you don't think, oh, Ben Powers is ruining the game at any point. And then Zeitler, they were pulling a bunch. He's been out in space a bunch, has continued to just be that consistently really good veteran presence. And I think those three have a good thing going on. Morgan Moses, I thought, against the Dolphins, had a really passive performance, especially in the run game. Didn't, you know, hey, maybe he's dinged up a little, has a little hurt, maybe not an injury, but, you know, didn't really bring it against the Dolphins, I thought. Then in this game, they're pulling him. They're getting him in space. He's, you know, pursuing defenders 10 yards downfield and, you know, opening up rushing lanes. Thought he played really well, fought really well. Never been an all-pro kind of guy, but never been a poor player in the NFL. So I think he's just, again, him and Zeitler are like consummate professional veterans on that right side. And then, like you said, Kevin Faalele comes in and is struggling a little bit, is getting his first taste of NFL experience on the other side that he's not super comfortable with, does get beat a couple times, and then really locks in, seals off a couple huge runs, is going to be someone that whoever is lined up across from him, and this was kind of my, I guess, take from draft season, it was like, you can live with what happens in pass pro as he's figuring out his set point, figuring out his vertical spots, like Cole said, because he is going to cave in the run game. He is going to cave in a defensive run. He has so much more work and refinement he can do technically, but to watch his feet, how quiet his feet are and how natural of a mover he is in space at his size, his arms, it is disturbing to watch. When he gets his big, meaty, gigantic 100-pound arms on you, defenders can't get them off. And his hand placement might not even be great on a rep. And he might kind of be, you know, in pass pro coming back, and he doesn't stab as hard as he even can. And it devastates. He's able to anchor so quickly. Had a couple really nice anchors in the second half. I thought had a lot to build on. Goes and pulls, which is crazy. A 6'9", 380-pound kid playing left tackle in his first NFL game, pulling from left to right across, seals off a run for Lamar Jackson to go win the game. So I think he had a lot to build on. They have to go play this Bills team upcoming. You know, Von Miller, I'm sure they're going to try and line him up on that side, even though he's usually on the other side and pick on him. But then you've got your bullies. You've got Ricard and Boyle and, you know, a guy like Josh Oliver who, hey, maybe he's not on their level, but he's willing to fight. You can go stick him over there and go fight, man. I think that it's going to be a really fun matchup to see. And him getting that trial by combat against Von Miller and against the Bills pass rush, that's been really devastating. So this offensive line, the run game, it took a little while to get going. They're running a lot more zone concepts, but zone concepts take more time because so much of it is five guys, up to seven, eight guys, including tight ends and the Pat Ricards of the world, having to be in lockstep, literally in lockstep, coming off the ball together at the same pace, being able to combo together, being able to reach together, pass off blocks together. It takes time, and this is a new group, and they have yet another, you know, new dance partner in Daniel Faalele. So luckily they got a couple veterans and a darn good rookie in there, and I think that they have the potential to be a top five, definitely top 10 unit in this league right now.
Yeah, and I think when you're talking about, they've done a bit of shuffling at left tackle. They've had to because of injuries, but the other four guys have been there. You know, they've been in the game. They've been getting reps together, and that's really important, especially when you're adding in, you know, a rookie center and a new right tackle, and you have that left guard competition as well. You know, it's going to take a little bit of time, but I am impressed with what they've done over these past couple of weeks here. But Spencer, speaking of shuffling, Baltimore has definitely done that and more at outside linebacker. Now they bring in Jason Pierre-Paul. And I know we've talked a bit about, you know, what could he bring to the Ravens and what could his role be? But we were talking about this when Steven Means was still healthy, when Justin Houston, again, we don't really know what's going on with him now, if he's going to be able to play, but he might miss this game against Buffalo too. Pierre-Paul officially signs on Monday, puts pen to paper. Is this a situation, Spencer, where the Ravens almost need Pierre-Paul active? Because it seems like every week, you know, they add Brandon Copeland on the practice squad, and then Justin Houston goes down, and we'll see. And now the Ravens might have to bring up a guy like Jason Pierre-Paul to speed extremely quickly. You hope that he's able to go on Sunday, but how badly do they need him considering all the injuries they've been through?
They absolutely need him. He's going to play. I don't think there's two ways about it. He's going to have to go play. I mean, he's getting him up to speed, all of these kinds of things, you know. Sure, yes, there is a curve still, but he's a 13-year veteran at this point. He's, you know, played in Super Bowls. Mentally, he's going to be able to go in and at least rush the passer on third down. You know, oh, it's a TE stunt. You know, there's really, as a pass rusher on third down at least, there's really only so many things that they're going to be asking you to do. Is there nuance to it? Is there more to learn to it? Sure. But he's going to be fine. Run game, you know, early downs, him, you know, missing camp, maybe not being, you know, I don't know what kind of shape he's in. So I'm sure the Ravens are kind of going to be willing to see. Am I expecting him to go play 50 snaps? No, but 20 snaps? Sure. Why not? He, you know, hasn't had a toll on his body. He took extra time to recover from surgery and they've worked him out twice now. I'm sure that, you know, they've kind of just really been settling on those numbers, and DaCosta tried to, I guess, be frugal and wait as long as he possibly could and lower that number. And then once you get that injury, you can't wait anymore. And they had to pull the trigger and you get yet another one. So luckily they did pull the trigger when they did, as opposed to maybe going through this process today and tomorrow and the next day and then getting him in. So at least he's already fitted, has a helmet and a jersey and some shoulder pads, and you can get him up to speed. I'm sure he's had the playbook for a couple of days and, you know, sending him all the information he's going to ultimately need. But like I said, he's a 13-year veteran. He's going to be able to come in and play football. It's what he's been doing for 20 years, 30 years, you know, going on 30 years probably at this point. So I think he'll be fine. I think we'll see what they get. He's got some sack incentives. They've got some incentives in that contract, and someone that's been one of the better pass rushers for the last decade.
Yeah, and definitely a move they did need to make, which is how much they've been through that position. Hopefully they'll get Tyus Bowser back at some point in the near future. But again, you just never know with that situation. He's eligible to come off for the pure start practicing, come off that list next week after week four. And Spencer, in week four, Baltimore does take on the Buffalo Bills, a game that, again, I don't know how it didn't get prime time, but it is not. We have a 1 o'clock game here on CBS, but this is a matchup that is obviously the biggest of Baltimore seasons so far. It's one of their biggest matchups of the entire year. And you have a Lamar Jackson versus Josh Allen showdown for the second time in their young careers. You mentioned Von Miller and that Bills defense banged up in the secondary right now for sure. But what are you looking for in that game for Baltimore, and how can they come out with a win?
Well, the Bills, and I guess a lot of people might have seen it, but they are 0-7 in their last one score games. And Josh Allen dropped back to pass, I think, 70 times. He is tired, and they are going on to play another road game, I think, at this point. I don't think the Bills are looking to be 2-2. They've suffered some pretty big injuries. They don't have, I think, I can't remember what happened to each safety. They have one of the best safety tandems of the last 5 years. One of them, I think, is out for the season with an unfortunate neck situation. The other one's banged up between Poyer and Hyde. Trey White still isn't back yet. They're hurting very badly. They still have a dynamic front. Matt Milano, one of the best linebackers in the NFL. Tremaine Edmonds, a really, really, really dynamic linebacker as well. But their secondary is hurting really badly. I think that the Bills would do everything in their power, realistically, in the first half to not have Josh Allen drop back 30, 40 times in a half, trying to run the ball, trying to get the ball out of his hands quickly, manufacturing some screens and quick touches and easy things for him. So I think the point is to just go tackle, go wrap up, go limit after the catch, limit what they do in the run game. Make sure that, you know, they have to kill you with 1,000 paper cuts and aren't just gashing you over top and allowing their secondary to breathe and allowing, you know, themselves to feel a little bit more relaxed. So I think it's imperative that they limit any kind of damage, like I said, after the catch in the first half. going to have to go make sure that if Fa'alele is out there, maybe we see Ronnie Stanley. I think at this point, you know, Stanley and Dobbins have kind of been 1 week apart from each other, and Stanley's been practicing for quite some time now. So, you know, wouldn't be surprised to see Stanley, but if it is Fa'alele or not, even if it is Stanley, like I said earlier in the previous segment, you're going to need Ricard. You're going to need Boyle. You're going to need to go run at Von Miller with those guys, frustrate him, annoy him, attack him, you know, beat up on those edges. And you know, J.K. Dobbins is someone that I think is going to continue to ramp up and is someone that probably has a little bit of maybe lingering resentment for what happened in Buffalo a couple of years ago before his knee injury. Had one of the worst game, probably the worst game of his professional career so far. So maybe leaning on J.K. Dobbins a little bit, trying to get the ball to Rashad Bateman in space and continuing to just have a balanced attack, pushing the ball against that secondary. The Ravens are, I think, fourth in the NFL in neutral down pass rate. So in other words, first and second down. It's time to keep that up, keep pushing the ball downfield, keep passing, keep going heavy and then running play action and limiting defense's ability to anticipate pass and respect the run. So I think that they get the Bills at the right time. A couple weeks ago, the Bills were rolling in hot weeks one and week two, and now they're ailing a little bit and on back-to-back road games against really tough teams. And they've kind of seen what the Dolphins can do defensively and offensively. So they have some concept of that. Now they can reference that in film yesterday and today and try and understand how they can manipulate things and go from there. So I think the Ravens definitely have a little bit of an advantage, and a Ravens team that really wants to go prove that this Bills team is not some upper echelon team in contrast with the Ravens.
Yeah, and I know that when you're talking about a game like this, you know, this is a statement game for sure. They want to go out there and make a statement and say, hey, look, the Bills are regarded as one of the best, if not the best teams in the NFL right now. And the Ravens can go out there and beat a team like that. They absolutely have a chance, 100%. I think it's going to be a good game, a close game, and I'm looking forward to it. But Spence, that's all I have for you here. Thank you so much for hopping on, joining me here again. And what do you have going on this week?
Just continuing to break down film, always on Twitter at Ravens4Dummies, BaltimoreBeatdown.com. You can find the Baltimore Beatdown podcast. We have Jonathan Ogden on today, looking to have that interview out tomorrow as well. And then we're going to have a really fun national guest who is a big Bills fan to preview that game as well later this week. So you can find all of that anywhere you get your podcast, the Baltimore Beatdown podcast. Thank you so much for having me, Kevin. And make sure to give the man who gives you the best daily Ravens coverage 5 stars, share Locked On Ravens with a friend, all that good stuff. And I'll talk to you guys next week.
I appreciate you as always, Spencer. And be sure to check out all Spencer's work. It will be in the description below on YouTube, of course. But that's all I have for you here today on Locked On Ravens. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you want to support the show, be sure to subscribe here on YouTube. Follow along in audio form. When we get back here tomorrow, we'll be diving into more Ravens content. So be sure to stay tuned for that. And I will see you right back here tomorrow.